Welcome into The Verge, a show which covers the Baltimore Orioles minor leagues. The Verge is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, and the University of Maryland. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations at the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
And now a word from our new sponsor, Birdland Sports. Baseball season is finally here. And what better way to celebrate than with some fresh gear from Birdland Sports? As a small business run by Orioles fans, Birdland Sports offers a great selection of unofficial merchandise, including unique designs like Birds Are Coming tees, player cartoon shirts, and World Series prediction designs. And the best part? Their prices are more affordable than the big guys. Get high-quality gear without breaking the bank. So whether you're heading to the ballpark or watching from home, show your love for the Orioles with Birdland Sports. Visit birdlandsports.com today to browse their collection and gear up for the season. Let's go, O's. Welcome to On the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And we have a lot to get to on tonight's episode, which started out even going into this morning, it's just a simple episode about predictions. And then it took kind of an interesting turn this morning when the Baltimore Banner reported that Grayson Rodriguez would not be making the opening day roster. And the Orioles later confirmed that in the afternoon. So we're going to get into that a little bit. And we're happy to be joined by a guest tonight. He is the host of Locked On Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we're happy to have him back on. He is Connor Newcomb. Connor, good to see you. How have you been?
I have been great. Yeah. Had you guys on a couple of weeks ago, did our fun minor league draft, and happy to be on here. And listen, it was a contentious day on the Orioles internet, but we're still, 3 days away from opening day. So there's still positives outweighing the negatives at this point for me.
And we'll start with what probably set off that contention, because I'm not on Twitter, but I have a pretty good idea of what it was. Andy Kostka, the Baltimore Banner, reported Monday morning that Grayson Rodriguez would not be making the opening day roster. That report came out shortly before the Orioles played the Cardinals on Monday afternoon. And then following that game, the Orioles confirmed the news with some interesting remarks from Mike Elias. And I'm quoting from Andy's article over at the Baltimore Banner. Elias had noted Rodriguez's issues getting through the fourth inning this spring, saying, quote, "We know what he's capable of. I wasn't expecting this. We were hoping he would show up as a better version of himself. Then I think we got here and we just had five other guys who were more deserving at this point in time." The Orioles rotation now looking like it will be Kyle Gibson, Dean Kramer, and then in some order, Cole Irvin, Kyle Bradish, and Tyler Wells to start this season with Rodriguez out of the mix. As Elias noted, Rodriguez had struggled to get through the fourth inning in his outings. He had two bad innings in back-to-back starts against Boston, and then had a bad third inning recently in his outing against the Tigers. So, Connor, I'll start with you here. We know that Rodriguez's spring training was far from flawless, yet the end result of him not making the opening day roster still seemed to be a surprise to many. So what was your reaction to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people that are listening or watching know that my reaction was fairly negative. You can get my full reaction on Tuesday's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast. Already recorded that one and went much longer than I thought I would, but I got a little worked up. I think my reaction was, I had talked about this on the pod before, and I even had a tweet that somebody dug up from like early March where I was like, I'm a little worried that the O's will use this bad Grayson appearance to say that he should be in AAA. So I was a little worried. And when I was doing like roster predictions, I was, giving caveats every time and saying, if they, want to do this with Grayson, here's what would happen then. I just feel like, why would Mike Elias go out of the way to talk about how, he was expecting Grayson Rodriguez to have every chance to be in that rotation if there was a chance he wasn't going to be, as long as he was healthy? And it's another case of where nobody's forcing Mike Elias to say some of these things, like we have liftoff, or, Grayson should be in the rotation, or, we're not going to compete for the playoffs this year. That's why we're trading these players. It's almost like he's not getting asked the questions. I mean, he is, but he doesn't have to answer like that. And I think he puts his foot in his mouth a lot of times. And I just got to the point where it was like, you know, Michael Elias is pretty calculated with what they talk about, especially the organization does not let anything out. So if Elias is going to say that, I just figured no matter the production, as long as he could build himself up and stay healthy, they would at least have him on an innings limit, maybe as a piggyback and the number five in the rotation. And it just, as Tyler Wells continued to start games, a little bit of doubt crept into my mind. But I was still just, I was shocked, to be honest, that the team that says they're trying to win is going to send him back to Norfolk.
I'll say I was surprised, not shocked, when I heard the news. I actually, on the Baltimore Sports and Life message board, there you go, Chris, there's a plug. Someone was going back and forth with me about they should keep him down to get that extra year. And I was like, no, I don't think so. I think baseball teams are telling you what they're valuing more is that new role to get that potential to get a first round pick if you win rookie of the year. And I think Grayson has a decent chance. Actually, for pitcher list, I wrote some bold predictions, and one was an Oriole will win the American League rookie of the year this year, but it will be Grayson Rodriguez and not Gunnar Henderson. Thanks a lot, Michael Elias, for making me look dumb. But yeah, I can see why, you know, 15, 20 innings at the beginning of 2023, you know, on paper might not, if I'm playing OOTP out of the park baseball, I might make the same decision, but I don't know. It just seemed like this was basically what Connor said, all the comments that Elias made about how he's pretty much made the team as long as he does it. And I think if he had had a successful 2022 season and had a lock spot coming into 2023 and he had the same exact spring, it would not been an issue at all. No one would have, you know, they would just been like, yeah, he's working through stuff, blah, 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 getting warmed up, you know, had some bad luck with hit per nine. His hit per nine was like double what it was in the minors. And yeah, his command could improve, but yeah, I'm surprised just because it seemed like Connor said, they're going out of their way to kind of hype up the fact that he's going to start the year in the majors. And obviously they went with getting that extra year of service time instead.
Let's try that again. That's why I'm so annoyed, because the Orioles have made it seem like, and Michael Elias himself made it seem like, Grayson Rodriguez was going to be a member of this organization come opening day, like you guys have mentioned. And, you know, I get, if you could come out and just say, like, look, he's going to be number five in our rotation. We don't need a number five right now, because they got what? One, two, three, four, like four off days before, like the first, what, 3 weeks of the season or something. So I get that. And, you know, you're going to limit his innings anyway. But at the same time, like, you've got, I don't want to say it's an easy schedule, because nothing in professional sports is easy. You say that, you lose 75% of your games. But, I mean, they've got, like, Texas, Oakland, Chicago, the Nationals, Detroit twice. Like, you've got a pretty cushiony schedule to begin the year. Like, Grayson Rodriguez really has nothing left to prove in AAA. Let him figure it out in three or four starts that first month of the year against that competition. And like, if he's getting bombarded, all right, then we've got a whole issue. Then we got a whole nother podcast topic to talk about. But I mean, I don't know. I guess you can make an argument. I get some of the argument why you want to send him down. Sure, he wasn't crisp. Sure, you want to see him get through a lineup twice. But I just think at this point, like, just figure it out in the major leagues at this point. That's just what I think. Like, enough of the AAA stuff. He doesn't need to be there. The DL Hall stuff, I completely understand. I think it's cool he's going back to AAA if you think he's going to be a starter. But Grayson Rodriguez, I just think, is a completely different story. He needed to be in the starting rotation. Tyler Wells, yes, he maybe ended the spring hotter than Grayson did, but like, I think Grayson Rodriguez gives you a better chance to win a ball game if he's your starter versus Tyler Wells.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you would have had a good argument. Look, you start him in the, it's going to look bad. I'm going to say if he comes up in May 1st and is dominant and finishes first or second in the rookie of the year voting, when you could have started him at the major leagues, like you said, if he struggles, you send him back down, you still gain that extra year of service. And it will be a little more respected that way. But yeah,
I think that part of it is that we didn't have the data that I think we would all like to have our hands on for how his pitches looked over the course of his outing. But kind of the moment where I thought, okay, he's probably going to make the rotation was one of his first outings. It might have been his very first outing. There was StatCast data, and the fastball was in the upper 90s. The fastball velocity was exactly where you would have wanted it to be. if Rodriguez had struggled the way that he did, and what we were hearing was the fastball's down a couple of ticks, he's not locating his secondaries very well, I would have understood this move a lot more. But to me, the stuff has looked good when it has been on. It's just that he hits these walls. And let's face it, in his minor league career, he's had these starts where he has hit these walls. And the other thing, too, is that we also know that a pitcher like him naturally is going to be a little home run prone. They throw hard, fastball rises up. When a hitter gets a hold of it, what do you think is going to happen? It's going to go out of the ballpark. So there was nothing that I saw from what we could see, which unfortunately wasn't much, that made me think that Rodriguez is really far behind. And when it comes to managing his innings, I could see the argument of you don't want to tax the bullpen a lot early in the year. So Tyler Wells, we know, can get us at least into the fifth. Most outings, whereas we don't think Rodriguez can right now. But you also do have good long relief depth at the major league level to start things out. So I feel like you could have found a way to manage that, especially because, I'll be honest, personally, I wasn't expecting a lot of Rodriguez starts early in the season that went 5-plus innings. I was thinking 4, maybe he gets into the fifth most nights, but doesn't really finish it. And then in May and June, that's when you want to look for the buildup.
Yeah, and I do think that it's, you know, there's some credence to the argument that, okay, you know, if he can't get through the fourth in spring, what if he can't get through the fourth in the majors for the first few times? We tax the bullpen. Do you get to the point where you have to send him down, or you have to put him on more of a pitch count? Does that mess with him? You know, the ultimate mess with him would have been makes the team, goes back down to AAA, you know, after 3 weeks. And I get that. But let's say he has 2 bad starts out of 3 in AAA to start the season. Like, what do you do then? Like, now you've backed yourself into this corner where if he doesn't look amazing, if he doesn't look like first half of last year's AAA season, Grayson Rodriguez, what's your plan? Like, are you just going to leave him in AAA until he rattles off a similar stretch to last year where he has, you know, 6 straight starts where nobody can touch him, and then you're going to call him up? At some point, and I think this has happened to prospects before, I think it happens a little more on bad teams, but you just get bored of the minor leagues at some point. And, you know, it's hard to keep that competitive drive going when there's a couple thousand people at Harbor Park on a Tuesday night and it's cold and the wind is blowing in and you're facing the White Sox AAA team and, you know, Mike Wright is the opposing pitcher on the other side. Like, it's tough to keep that edge up. And Grayson Rodriguez pitches with a lot of edge. And at some point, that's how I looked at actually some of DL Hall's starts last year when he would struggle. I'd just be like, this guy feeds off the energy, and he's probably getting a little bored in AAA. And so I worry that at some point, they've backed themselves into a corner where it's like, what are you going to do? Because he may not have 6 starts that are dominant in a row. And if that's what you're looking for, then you might be in a weird spot. And there's also a chance that these 5 current starters don't pitch incredibly poorly. So, you know, there's a chance that these 5 guys keep you in games. Now, none of them are aces, but they keep you in games, and there's not like a glaring, gaping hole for the first month or two. I just think they've put themselves in a weird spot with what they've said versus what they've done. And I think it could get weird for Grayson. And I talked about on my show that's coming out tomorrow, you know, this doesn't help your future with a player. And just look at who this has happened to. Chris Bryant, Carlos Correa, Corbin Burns, none of them signed extensions with their teams. I know that's a little far in advance, but like, Grayson Rodriguez is not happy right now. And I don't know if he's even like, oh, I'm mad, I'm going to prove it mad. He's more like, this doesn't even make sense mad at this point, I would think.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point too about it. And that's why him feeding off that energy and, all right, yeah, if you're struggling or you're going out there and you're facing like not even like the opposite pitcher is Mike Wright, but you're facing Tim Beckham in that AAA Charlotte lineup. Like, you're not going to be able to improve to get through that major league lineup a second time. So why not just send him out there against Oakland and say, go figure it out. Send him out there against Detroit and say, go figure it out. We trust you. You are our guy. We want you to be the future ace of this team. I don't know. This is the one move that I think is, you know, a lot of these other guys just that send down, I get it. You can make valid cases here, but the Grayson Rodriguez thing is just, it's one of the first times where I'm just like, this is annoying. Like, yeah, he should have went out there and earned it this spring. I do get that argument as well. He could have pitched better and dominated and said left Orioles with no choice. But at the same time, it's just like, what does he have left to prove in AAA? And I don't think it's really anything.
Yeah, and this is the first time you see players tweeting out some frustration and then deleting it. I think you saw that from a few guys. And obviously his mom, not too happy, retweeting some good arguments against the decision. But the thing that pisses me off the most is that I had tickets for Monday at home against Oakland, which would have been the fifth starter's second time through the rotation, and I would have been there for Grayson's home debut. But, you know, I guess I'll just have to buy more tickets in hopefully late April instead.
Well, we'll get into Grayson Rodriguez a little bit more later on. But coming off of this conversation, I thought we should really turn our attention to something pleasant. And let's talk about Lamar Jackson for 10 minutes.
Hey, Terps, last time I checked before I came down here, Terps women basketball was holding their own against South Carolina. So maybe there's going to be a slight – I haven't checked in the last, like, 10 minutes, but maybe there's some slight good news in Baltimore.
We're down eight. We're down eight in the third quarter.
Never mind. Move on. Prediction time.
So I'll start off with this prediction. Will Gunnar Henderson win American League Rookie of the Year? And I'll let Connor start with this one.
Yes. I mean, I think he is the best rookie in the American League right now. Anthony Volpe being on the opening day roster certainly helps his case. But Anthony Volpe is going to hit ninth for the Yankees, whereas Gunnar Henderson at some point soon is going to hit third for the Orioles. As long as the O's don't bottom out, because he will get Yankee boost if he plays somewhat well. As long as the O's don't bottom out and they stay afloat, I think there's a reason he is like by far the favorite at like all sports books. I think he's going to have a great year. I think the O's will get that draft pick anyway from Gunnar Henderson. And I think it's going to be an amazing season. And the other thing with Rookie of the Year, you generally don't have to have like a crazy year to win the award. Now, Julio Rodriguez was the exception last year, but generally, you know, like when John Means finished third, you don't have to have this outstanding year to win Rookie of the Year. Sometimes this could be one of those years as well, but still think Gunner's going to have a great year.
Yeah, since I can't really go with, I mean, Grayson, let's not kid ourselves. He could come up May 1st, like we were saying, and just be lights out for the rest of the year and still come close to winning that award. But yeah, I think now it's Gunner's to lose. I mean, what the WAR was predicting 3-4 win season for him. He had 0.8 in the short amount of time he had at the end of last year. I think he's going to prove that spring numbers mean absolutely nothing, and I don't think you have to worry about him whatsoever. He's going to start the year at third base. I think he'll be the starting shortstop by June, July. I think Mateo will slide into more of a reserve role. I think we got a preview of that with him getting some time in center field. So, yeah, I think he's going to hit like 275 with 25, 30 home runs and 20 stolen bases and good defense. And to me, that's Rookie of the Year. Anthony Volpe, I'm sure he's going to be solid. I have no doubt. But yeah, I'll take Gunnar Henderson over him any day of the week.
I'm afraid we're all going to say yeah and do the whole jinx there. But I'm going to say yes as well, just because he's going to be a pretty big piece to this roster. Hopefully he's batting. Hopefully he's not, you know, in the bottom third of the lineup and he's at near the top, but he's going to be a key piece to this roster. He's going to have an opportunity to, you know, flash defensively. And even if he's only like 75% of what projections think, I think that's going to be good enough, like Connor mentioned, to win Rookie of the Year honor. So I'll say yeah.
I'm going yes as well, just for all the reasons you guys mentioned. I think that the fact that he's coming into the season as the consensus number one prospect in the game is going to help him out a lot. And I'm also curious to see what effect the balanced schedule has, because now it's not going to have to be as lopsided from the East Coast necessarily, perhaps, but in terms of his vote distribution. But I think he'll win Rookie of the Year.
Second one here is the big one. We're going to go hard here at the beginning. What's the Orioles record this year, Bob?
Well, that's an easy answer. It's obviously 88-74. I do have the 2023 Sports Almanac from when I visited the future. I think 86-91 wins is realistic, so I'll go right in the middle of that, 88, and sneak into a wild card, first time in the playoffs under the Elias regime, and Grayson Rodriguez starts game one.
Zach?
I'm going to go 86 and 76, good enough for a playoff spot as well. And they will lose in the first round to the Cleveland Guardians.
I think actually they're going to do it in a very different way, but I think they're going to finish 83 and 79 again. I think they're going to have a hotter start to the season just because, Nick, you mentioned this. April is the only month where the Orioles' combined record of their opponents from last year is below 500, and it's well below 500. And every other month is pretty much well above 500 because you say, yay, we don't have to play the AL East anymore. Well, now you have to play the entire NL West, so have fun with that. You got to play the Dodgers and the Padres, and the Diamondbacks look like they have a good baseball team now. And, oh, yeah, you do have to play the Mets this year and the Phillies and the Braves. I think they're going to do a different roundabout way to get there. Like, they're going to be in it to start, and they're going to be in it for most of the year. I just think guys are going to fizzle out a little bit. Some guys will take some steps back, and it'll be a good chance to reassess. Like, okay, we had the same record, but for a different reason. Let's look at it. But I'm going to say 83 wins.
I'm going to go 85 and 77. It'll be a good year, solid year. Will that be enough to get into the playoffs? I hope so. I think that will be with the expanded playoffs. But yeah, I think I was the high guy last year among the three of us. I think this year I'm the low guy among at least the three of us here. So we'll see how that pans out.
All right. We'll start with Connor for my question, which is, have you finished season three of Emily in Paris yet? No. What pitcher will lead the Orioles in strikeouts?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I don't think this guy will be close to the innings lead, but I just think Kyle Bradish's stuff is so good and he's going to rack up so many strikeouts, even in games when he pitches five innings, that he might finish with 160 innings and Cole Irvin might finish with 200 innings and Bradish is going to strike out more batters this year. I think he found the repertoire that worked for him at the end of last year. I think he added to it in the offseason. He refined it. Now, he's not going to throw 50% breaking balls every start like he did against the Astros last year, but he's going to be able to pull that out of his back pocket later in games when the fastball is working a little better early. I think he's changed the shape of that pitch a little bit because his fastball, it did have some struggles last year. I think we'll see more sinkers. And I think just that breaking stuff is so, so good that it's going to be a lot of Ks for Bradish. There's going to be some walks, going to be some short starts, but a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, I think a lot of people kind of scoffed at the talk from the organization that Bradish was on that like Grayson DL tier prospect status. And while I think after the trade, a lot of people were like, yeah, he's probably a relief prospect. But I'm going with Bradish as well. I think he's going to have a big year. I love the stretch at the end of the year. I liked what I've seen the spring training. He's going to have those nights where, you know, the stuff just isn't working or the command is off. But when he's tapped in, I think he's probably the best starter on this team right now.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think it's going to be Bradish. I think what's interesting is that Bradish, the strikeouts didn't quite come around for him right away last year. And that was a big part of his game at the minor league level that you wouldn't have necessarily known from looking at Bradish sometimes last year, even when he was pitching well. So I think just getting used to major league hitters, getting used to major league strike zones, it's going to be a big key for him. And he looked a lot more confident, a lot more comfortable on the mound over the last month of the season last year. So like you both touched on, he doesn't have to lead this team in innings. He doesn't have to throw a lot of innings to lead this team in strikeouts, and I think he'll do that.
Yeah, I'll make it a clean sweep. I know I predicted on our first Major League Mailbag, which we'll be recording on weekends, that it would be DL Hall in an upset, and I think even him and Grayson Rodriguez are dark horses for this still if they can get up soon enough because I think they'll strike out more per nine, but Bradish will be there from the beginning. I think he'll through 150 to 180 innings and probably come close to 200 strikeouts. So, yeah, give me Bradish on this one as well.
Who will lead the Orioles in home runs this year? And I'll start with Nick.
I'm going to buy into the Ryan Mountcastle progression in 2023. I think I have some takes about him and his future here in Baltimore for another episode. But for right now, I've actually invested like a lot of actual like real hard-earned money into Ryan Mountcastle in his season this year. So, hopefully he's productive, but I genuinely do believe that he's in store for a big year.
I'm going Santander back-to-back. Home run championship, leader, belt, whatever. I just think he looks so good in the WBC. He looks in even better shape than he did last year, which was better than the year before. I think he's just really coming into his own as a power hitter in this league. And if he can continue to improve the patience at the plate, I think the home runs will be even higher just because he'll be swinging at the right pitches to do damage with. And yeah, I think he'll hit like 34, 35 this year.
Gunnar Henderson, 32 home runs. Give him the rookie of the year right there. And he's going to strike out. And the average might not be, you know, near 300 at times. But I think he's going to hit some homers this year. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I would love to see that, but I'm going with Anthony Santander. I think the progression as a hitter from last year is going to carry over into this year, and he could actually even be a little bit better. I think he's going to hit – I'll go with 34 home runs from Santander, enough to lead the team. Plus, his left-handed swing plays perfectly for Camden Yards. And with all the improvements he has made as a hitter, I think he'll tap into that even more.
All right. Anybody win a gold glove this year in Birdland? Let's start with Zach on this one.
I'm going to say two Orioles win Gold Glove Awards. Adley Rutschman will win behind the plate. He should have been a finalist last year, and with Sean Murphy no longer in the American League, I think you can make the argument, hands down, Adley Rutschman is the best defensive catcher in the league, and he'll win it this year. And I'm going to go with Cedric Mullins winning one. He's come close the last 2 years, and while I don't necessarily think that the voters were wrong to not give it to him in either case, I think that he's been close enough that a third straight year of being a finalist will be enough for him to get the award. You combine that with the usual good defensive metrics and a bounce back in his numbers at the plate, which sometimes matters a lot more than it should with Gold Glove awards, will be enough to put him over the top.
Yeah, I don't think Jorge Mateo plays enough shortstop to win it. And I don't think Ramon Urias plays enough at least one position and potentially with the Orioles to win one again. I think Mullins will finish second. He will deserve it, but Julio Rodriguez will get it because he's Julio Rodriguez. And I think Adley will win it going away. So I will say Adley Rutschman.
I think two as well. Adley Rutschman, obviously. Just give it to him now. But Gunnar Henderson at third base. Let's have two different Orioles be a finalist at third base back-to-back years. And this time Gunnar gets it. I just think he's proven to be pretty smooth out at shortstop. You move him to third and for once, I agree with Keith Law. He's plus-plus over third base.
The Gunnar Gold Glove would be just absolutely beautiful. I only had one. I just said Adley. Yeah, I don't think Mateo's an everyday regular by the end of the year, so that hurts his chances. And a lot of competition out there in the outfield. But, yeah, I went Adley, especially with all these new metrics that you're getting on Baseball Savant to measure certain things. I think that helps him. And when you're, like, the guy, the gold standard in some of these new metrics, as in Adley's case. So that's why I'm going just one, just Adley.
All right. My next one is, who out of Connor Norby, Jordan Westberg, and Joey Ortiz will debut first this season? And will any of them not debut at all? Let's go, Zach.
I'm going to say Jordan Westberg. I just think that he's the closest to major league ready. And he just, you know, unfortunately, it's a depth issue for him right now. I don't think he could have hit any better this spring. I am curious to see how he's going to be used in Norfolk. I said on the show a few weeks ago that I think he needs to incorporate, he's going to need to have left field time this year in order to get the most major league at bats he can get. And I'll be interested to see if that holds true, but I think he's ahead of Ortiz and Norby right now in terms of his development. So I'm going to say that he does get there first out of those three. And I think we will see all three this season. I think we'll go in order Westberg first, then Ortiz, and then Norby late in the season.
I think things would tell you that it's Jordan Westberg, and Mike Elias tried to tell us it was Jordan Westberg today when he said, you know, it shouldn't be long. So that leads me to believe it will be Joey Ortiz. I will say Ortiz gets there because something happens with a trade with an infielder. Maybe Jorge Mateo is not producing. And I think Ortiz has the quickest, you know, plug and play potential to come to the big leagues. I'll say Westberg second, but everybody's yelling about it all season. And then I love Connor Norby. And that's why I think maybe he doesn't get to the big leagues, or potentially he's the guy who's traded to get a major league piece at the deadline and never makes it to the big leagues with the Orioles. So I'll say two of three make it with Ortiz being first.
I also have a little prediction in my prediction, but it's Westberg, not Norby. I said Westberg first, but you know, Norby's defense is going to be the big talking point. It's going to be the Jamai Jones talking point of last year. Ortiz, they could use that excuse of he in concussion protocol for so long, so you know, missed a lot of spring, going to need more time in AAA. So that's why I think it could be Westberg, but I don't think Westberg is in Baltimore by the end of the year. I think he's the guy that's traded.
Yeah, maybe he gets to the majors first, but with a different team. But I'll say he comes up. Let's just say Ramon Urias jams his thumb again, Heskey on the IL. I think Westberg's the guy that comes right up. I think I would have said Ortiz if it wasn't for the concussion. I think he played in a spring game recently, so hopefully he's coming back from that okay. And I don't think Norby will be traded, but I could see a world where he doesn't debut this year. Just we're loaded at infield, and if the, you know, Elias will not trade Urias or Mateo unless a offer too good to refuse comes through. So just a numbers game. I'm not sure if Norby can make it this year, but he should. He should.
Go with a similar prediction here, which is when will Colton Calder debut this season, if he debuts at all? And I'm going to start with Bob.
I think he will. I think he'll get up here. Maybe, you know, this is just a trend with the Orioles now. Later than everybody wants. I'll say July or August, either right before the trade deadline or right after. Maybe Austin Hayes has a great first half and he gets it out, and then Colton Cowser comes up to take his place. But then if Austin Hayes has a great first half and the Orioles are in playoff contention, will they trade him at all? So it's tough. I just think now that we are a team that's contending, it's going to be harder to bring these guys up and let them struggle in the major leagues for a long time. But I do think he comes up maybe July or August.
I'll say September 1st. I think the Santander Mullins Stowers combination will be good enough to keep him down. And I think Austin Hayes will be productive enough in his at bats where we want Colton Cowser, but it's not a crazy clamoring for Colton Cowser. And I think when the Orioles want to add one extra hitter on September 1st, I think Cowser becomes that guy because he can give you defense in the outfield while having, you know, a bat with a higher ceiling than, you know, some of the outfielders that are currently on the roster.
Yeah, I said not until after the trade deadline, because you're going to give someone like Hayes an extended look. Unless somebody's traded or unless there's an injury, he's not coming up anytime soon. So, yeah, I said just after the trade deadline. One other prospect prediction here about when would they debut. Oh, sorry, Zach.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in real quick. I'm full agreement with Connor, September 1st at Arizona. I think that if the Orioles are competing, that outfield is going to be a big part of it. So you are actually going to have a legitimate question as the season goes on. If you bring up Colton Cowser, is he actually an upgrade over that group of Mullins, Santander, Stowers, who I think is going to have a nice year, and Hayes? And here's the other thing is when I look at this schedule, the beginning of September is going to be grueling because you've got a West Coast road trip that runs through Arizona and Anaheim, then an off day to come back east and play the Red Sox at Fenway, and then a home series against the Cardinals. You're going to want to try to rest everybody a little bit during that stretch. And it would be really nice to have fresh Colton Cowser fresh up from AAA to give your outfielders a night off at during that time period.
I like it. What about Heston Kjerstad? Same question, Connor.
I don't think we see him in the big leagues this year just because Cowser, unless Kjerstad goes off, which I'm not going to stop him. I mean, it could happen. Cowser just ahead of him in the pecking order. And the Orioles, while the Orioles infield is certainly catching up to this, it feels like the Orioles outfield is still the most set group of positions on this major league roster right now. And it's just going to be tough to crack. And I think the easiest spot to crack right now is Ryan McKenna's spot. But are you really going to call up a Cap
and have five different outfielders in there? So I think we see him early next year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with early next year as well. I don't think he reaches the majors this year because there's so much depth at Norfolk and in the major leagues. So you're also looking at the fact that he's a corner guy, and while I don't think it's entirely limiting for him, you also have to have one of your corner outfielders struggling in order to make room for him down the stretch, which I just don't think is going to happen if the Orioles are competing. The only way that I see Kjerstad getting there this year is if he has a Gunnar Henderson-style April in Bowie. Just goes off, no doubts that he's ready for AAA, and he spends probably two-thirds of the season, if not more, at Norfolk. But I feel like his timeline's going to be slightly more conservative than that.
Yeah, I think maybe they can, you know, they had Gunnar Henderson this year to try to get that Rookie of the Year draft pick. Maybe they're going to bank on Heston Kerstad doing that for 2024, starting the season on the roster as like a corner outfield DH. But, you know, you got Colton Cowser, who we already just talked about. Is there going to be room for him? And then you got, don't forget about Hudson Haskin, who is going to start in AAA and could be a guy that comes out in the injury. I mean, obviously, if Heston performs, he'll leapfrog Haskin, no problem. But Haskin at least will be right there at AAA as another option. So I just think 2023 is tough for Kerstad. Just let him rake, let him cook all year, and then 2024 can be his breakout.
Yep. Clean sweep there. I'm going to say no. I mean, because there was that talk about how much everybody loved him and how he could end the year in the majors, that's a definite no. So, yeah, unfortunately. Unless he has a Delmarva-type season in Bowie and Norfolk, which I could see that hard happening. But
all right, will Jackson Holiday make it to the majors? I mean, how high will Jackson Holiday make it this year? Let's throw it right back to Nick.
I'm going to say screw it. Let's get optimistic. A couple days away from opening day, I'm going to say a brief taste of AAA by the end of the year. Let's buy into the hype.
I like that answer. I mean, if it were going to be that, it would be a Connor Norby style 2 weeks at the end of the year. And I would hope if it was Connor Norby style, like, hey, you just mash a bunch of homers in 2 weeks in Norfolk. We'd be talking about Holiday in the big leagues in 2024. I think he'll get to AA, and I think he'll see his first struggles in professional baseball in AA when he gets there in the second half of this year. And I think although he'll make his way out of it, that will keep him in AA for the rest of the year.
I'm going to go with Bowie as well. I think that he'll start the year at Delmarva, and the big point of emphasis is going to be, can he hit the ball hard without hitting on the ground as much as he did when he was there last year? That was admittedly a very small sample size, and that's something you really have to nitpick. But if you are going to nitpick, that's something you would look at during his time at Delmarva last year, and you hope that he would get better at before he leaves Low A. I actually think Aberdeen's going to be where he struggles a little bit, because I think that jump from Low A to High A is hard. And I think it has gotten harder in the last few years. And we also know that Ripken Stadium just isn't a great place to hit. So I think a season that looks kind of like Gunnar Henderson's 2021 is what's going to be in store for Jackson Holiday. Hot start at Delmarva, some ups and downs at Aberdeen, but he finishes strong there, gets some promotion to Bowie, and he's there for the final weeks of the season.
Yeah, it would be nice to know, to help with this prediction, where he's going to start. Is he going to start back at Delmarva? Is he going to start at Aberdeen? I'm going to guess he gets a brief cameo 1 month in Delmarva back just to get his confidence up and get a season started on the right foot. I don't think he's really going to struggle anywhere. I think his batter's eye is just too good. His plate discipline is too good. Yeah, he's probably not going to hit for the power that Gunnar did in, 2021. But I think he's going to hit for average. I think he's going to have on base over 400 no matter where he goes. He's going to hit his doubles. I just think he'll stop at AA, but there will be an argument that could be made that maybe he could get that last week or two in AAA, and then they shut him down. And gosh, is he a guy that we're going to have the argument of, should he, you know, be in the majors early 2024? Let's save that for this time next year.
Will Grayson Rodriguez finish in the top three of Rookie of the Year voting? I'm going to start this one with Bob.
Awesome. There's some pretty good rookies, I feel like, in the American League. Oscar Colas is starting with Chicago. Anthony Volpe with New York, obviously. But yeah, he's going to get third place because he's going to come up with a chip on his shoulder and he's going to strike out 150 batters in 110 innings and sneak in third place.
I hope he gets third place or second place so he can get that year of service time back for his sake. But I'm going to say no. I think the Orioles will put themselves in a little bit of a trap here where he won't come up till May-ish. And by that time, he's also going to be on a bit of a pitch count. And that all combined, you know, he could still finish top three with a lower innings count. But if somebody else jumps up behind Henderson into that number two spot, voters are going to look at 110 innings and not want to give that a lot of votes. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah. No, just because, like you mentioned, the innings thing, he's going to come up, get the phantom IL stint. He's going to be held back a little bit. So maybe this team is in the playoff push, and maybe he is pitching well, and you want to save him, conserve those innings for the playoff run or in the playoffs. So, yeah, nope.
No, I don't think he's going to get there. I think he's going to pitch well when he gets to the major leagues, and he could be a big part of the Orioles' stretch run. But I also think the rookie class this year is fairly deep in hitters, so it's going to be hard for a starting pitcher, especially one that's not up for the full season, to crack the top three.
All right, back to the Major League All-Star talk. Who is going to represent the Baltimore Orioles in this year's All-Star game, Connor?
Well, Adley Rutschman is just – it's too easy. I mean, especially with Sean Murphy out of the American League right now – I mean, who were the All-Stars last year? It was Trevino and Jonah Heim, I think, at catcher. It's like, come on. I mean, as long as he's healthy, he is going to be an easy All-Star and should be for a decade in the American League. After that, it's going to be interesting. I think we'll see a pitcher, and I think it's going to be Kyle Bradish because I'm so bought into what he's going to do this year. And because of that, I don't know if we'll get Felix Bautista in there, although I think he could have a season worthy of it. There's just so many dominant relievers that it's ridiculous. So I'm going to say Rutschman and Bradish represent the Orioles.
Give me five Orioles All-Stars. Adley Rutschman, resurgent Ryan Mountcastle, phenom Gunnar Henderson, WBC USA center fielder Cedric Mullins, and the mountain Felix Bautista. Yeah, I'm an optimist, so sue me, but give me five Orioles on that team.
I'm going to go with four. I'm going to go with Gunnar, Adley, Felix Bautista. I think he gets there, and then Cedric Mullins.
Nice. I only went to Adley and Felix Bautista. I like the article. Was that also – yeah, it was also Andy Koska. 2 weeks in a row, major shout-outs to Andy Koska. He deserves it. About Felix Bautista tipping his pitches and was still as dominant as he was last year. That's awesome. He's come out firing 9,900 miles an hour in his spring outing. So, yeah, I like the two of them. I think he's going to be so good in his outings. Those are the only two I got, I think.
All right, next up. Who will be the most pleasant surprise for the Orioles in 2023, Zach?
I'm going to go with C.N.L. Perez. Because I think everyone's assuming that Perez is going to completely collapse and fall back to earth. And I don't think he's going to be as dominant as he was last year. But I think more often than not, you're going to want the ball in his hands in a tight spot, especially if you've got a lefty up there. He can generate high ground ball rates. He's shown that time and time again. If Perez comes out and has a season where his ERA is in the low threes and the strikeout and walk numbers are about the same as they were last year, I wouldn't call that a disappointment, and I think that's entirely in the realm of possibility. So I'll go with Perez.
I'm going to do a pitcher as well. I think despite the fact that this guy is starting opening day, no one is expecting anything of him. But if John Angelos and Mike Elias are going to invest $10 million in one player, I think we're going to see a resurgent Kyle Gibson this year. I think we're going to see just a better version of what the Orioles were able to do with Jordan Lyles last year, where they kind of had him do his best stuff and take away from his worst stuff and his previous stops in the major leagues. I think that new sweeper is going to help him out. I think he's going to throw a lot of strikes, not walk a lot of guys like what happened this spring. And he's not going to be an all-star, but I think everyone's expecting he's going to be either the five starter or literally out of the rotation by September. Whereas I think we're going to be counting on him Jordan Lyles style by the end of the year.
I like it. I like it. I just like Gibson and Irvin a lot more, I think. And they're not going to be all-stars, not going to be fantastic, but I think they're going to be solid contributors on this roster. My pleasant surprise, I bashed him a lot since the end of the season. I think I bashed him in front of some Orioles front office members at Full Tilt Brewing. I'm going to say Austin Hayes. I don't even know if I fully bought into my own argument here, but I'm going to throw out Austin Hayes as a preseason prediction. Again, shout out to Andy Koska. I like what he said on our show last week about how Hayes has been a guy who's never really made changes to his swing, but he has now. And so maybe that's going to unlock something. He's got to be consistent. He's remained largely injury free for the last 2 years. So that's one good sign. But if he can remain consistent, maybe he sees Kowser and Kershdad and that lights a fire under him. Getting more sleep. Baby's a little bit older. Give it to him.
Honorable mention for me, Adam Frazier. It's not going to take much for him to be a pleasant surprise for Orioles Twitter and Birdland. But I'll go with Vivek's pick here as well, Kyle Stowers. I feel like he's kind of been a forgotten man since he, you know, we assumed he'd come up and play every day once Mancini was traded last year, and he didn't. They went out and got Brett Phillips instead, and then he wasn't played against lefties. You know, there's I feel like just Kyle Stowers was a top 10 prospect in this loaded system not long ago, and he's got serious power. He had a decent spring. I think he's going to start the year part-time player, maybe plays 4 or 5 days a week, 3 to 5 days a week. And then by June, I think he's in there most nights, and I think he's going to be a really good corner outfielder for this team for a long time.
We'll go to the flip side, and what will be or who will be the biggest disappointment this season? I'll start with Connor here.
Yeah, so my initial thought for this was Jorge Mateo, but when I really thought about it, I was like, his defense isn't going to regress, and he's not going to steal less. He's going to steal less bases, but that'll be because he plays less. But then you remember, his bat really wasn't that good, so I don't think it'll really make him a big disappointment if he hits 195 instead of 220 this season. So instead, I think for disappointment, we can go, can I say like Austin Voth and Tyler Wells as a combination? I think these two guys, although I like the stuff and I really like Wells, I think Wells' future is in the bullpen. And I think now that he is getting that five spot and going to get a chance to run with that, I think we could see some struggles. And I get that he was a good starter last year. I just don't think he has the stuff to stay in that spot for a long time. And I think Voth as well. I think the Orioles just kind of got all the good out of Austin Voth. And I think by May, we could be in a, maybe it's time to send him back to the Nationals situation.
I'll go. Sorry. Biggest disappointment. I don't know. I don't really who I want to like bash here. I like a lot of these players. Adam Frazier does seem like just an easy target here. I was thinking Tyler Wells. I could say also Austin Hayes to reverse my other opinion, give both sides there. I'm going to say Ramon Urias. I think maybe moving him around, I hope not, because I love him. I love his brother as well, but I think maybe just moving him around the infield a little too much. He doesn't have that steady play. Say, I want a gold glove at third base, and now you're moving me around every single night. A lot of competition coming up, and maybe the bat just isn't there. Maybe the defense is, but the bat just isn't living up to, you know, what Gunner's doing, what Mountcastle is doing, even what Taron Vavra is hopefully doing. So maybe Ramon Urias regresses a little bit and is a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, I was going to sit there and wait until you answered because I needed time to think. I think between Jorge Mateo and Austin Hayes, those are my picks. I think Mateo, I don't think he's ever going to hit enough. And I'm not trying to be Kyle Glazer over here, but I do think he'll be a valuable piece on a contending team just because of his defense and his speed. But I just don't know if the bat will ever work. And then Austin Hayes, swing change or not, he just can't stay healthy. I know he thinks it's like this big accomplishment that he played most games of the season last year and didn't go into IL for very long, but you still were playing nicked up and not 100%, and it affected your numbers at the end of the day. I don't know. I think Kyle Stowers, like I said with my previous answer, is going to kind of take over his role as the everyday left fielder by June. So give me those two.
So kind of building off of what I said for my surprise, I do think you're going to have some regression in the bullpen this year, and I feel like between Dylan Tate and Michael Givens, you're not going to get quite the production you were hoping for. And it pains me to say that because I was high on Tate going into last year, and I'm still high on him. But this is a guy who's had injury issues in the past. He's starting the season on the IL, and I think at the very least, you're going to have to find a way to make up for his innings. And that's not to say that he can't come back later on and pick up where he left off, but it does leave me with the concern that, all right, they're both going to, Givens and Tate are going to start the year on the IL. Givens showed a little bit of regression last year, and so you're going to have to figure out if he's a little bit worse, who steps into that role, and then who steps into Dylan Tate's role. Fortunately, I think the bullpen depth at AAA is actually going to be really good this year. So you're not going to have to work too hard to figure that out, but it is going to be a problem for them.
All right. Who wrote this question? This sounds like a Bob question. What is going to be the longest running Civil War on Orioles Twitter, Bob?
I actually didn't, but it's a good question. I mean, we should ask Connor first, but I'll go with trade deadline 2023. I think Orioles fans are expecting Corbin Burnes and no one less. So especially now that Elias has said, you know, he expects to go by at the deadline this year. If it's not Corbin Burnes, which it won't be. Yeah, the pitchforks will be out in full force. So I'll just say trade deadline and pretty much all the months leading up to it and after it.
Well, one already started. And I was caught in the middle of it. That'll be Grayson Rodriguez. I think it's going to continue. Whether Grayson throws five shutout with 12 strikeouts in his first AAA start, or whether he goes 2 2/3 and gives up 6 earned runs, I think either way, there's going to be bad discourse on the timeline for Grayson Rodriguez. I have 3, actually, and some contribute. Well, that takes my third one, so I'll just make that number 2. I think the Brandon Hyde hatred is going to grow because for all of this season, fans are going to be expecting a winning team. I don't think we really started getting mad at Hyde's decisions until the 10-game winning streak, which was early July when the Orioles like proved that they were in this thing. Now imagine that, but the entire season. And if I'm going to mute the word punt until at least football season, because I can't see it anymore. Like Adley can't play 7 days. I'm so sorry to burst your bubbles, but he cannot play 7 days. Anthony Benboom is going to start like the first Sunday game of the year, probably. So get ready for that. But I think that's number 2. And number 3, I mentioned it already. It's going to be a prospect. When is he coming up? And it's going to be Adam Frazier struggling and Jordan Westberg raking, or Joey Ortiz raking, or Connor Norby raking, or all of them raking. And either Adam Frazier or maybe Jorge Mateo or Ramon Arias, or it could be really bad if all of them are playing poorly and all 3 infielders are playing well in AAA. Things could get ugly.
Yeah, I'm going to build off of that and say that it is going to be the longest war on Orioles Twitter this year, because between Norby, Ortiz, and Westberg, you're going to have a prospect that people think is better than Adam Frazier. And then I would even throw Kobe Mayo into that mix. If Mayo gets off to a hot start at Bowie, you're going to have people clamoring for him to get to the major leagues this year. And I'll say this. This is what I expect of Adam Frazier. In 3 seasons from 2017 to 2019 at Pittsburgh, he slashed .277, .340, .421 with a .102 OPS plus. I could see a season that's similar to that with a little bit lower batting average and a little bit higher on-base percentage. In other words, Adam Frazier will do exactly what he was brought in to do, nothing more, nothing less. You will have one part of Orioles Twitter that says that that's not enough. He should be hitting 30 home runs and playing gold glove level defense. You will have another corner of Orioles Twitter insisting that they're going to re-sign him in the offseason. You will never see a prospect ever play second base again. And these two sides of Orioles Twitter will go at it from right now until the final day of the season, probably until the winter meetings. So that's going to be the biggest war on Orioles Twitter. And I wrote this question.
The guy without Twitter. I was listening to a Padres podcast earlier today, and they were having Rougned Odor discussions, and it was like it had flashbacks. But I do think it is going to be the infield. I agree with both of you guys. I do like the Hyde answer as well. I went outfield, and I'm going to say Colton Cowser. I just think the average, I could see this happening where the average is not what you want it to be. The strikeouts are going to be higher than what you want, but the OBP is going to be very nice. We see the power down there in Norfolk. Someone in the majors is going to be struggling, and chaos will commence. I think we've already seen, maybe that's a little bit of an easy answer because Colton Cowser has already been a ticking time bomb, but yeah, that's I can see all those situations playing out very easily, and I'm sure every single one of them is going to happen.
All right, next up, give me your biggest bold pitching prediction, Connor.
For the Orioles?
For the Orioles, yes. Let me specify.
My bold pitching prediction, I'll just steal from my bold prediction episode last week on my podcast, is that Kyle Bradish by the end of the year is like our slam dunk opening day starter in 2024. It's not Grayson Rodriguez. It's not, you know, the consistency of Cole Irvin. It's not even Dean Kramer. It is Kyle Bradish, like, taking it to the next level where he ascends into Hall Rodriguez level, except he shows it for a full season already. And that goes along with me saying he's going to be an all-star. He just keeps it up in the second half. And we're looking at, like, oh, we don't have to worry about all offseason who's going to start opening day. Like, we know who it's going to be. And that's even with John Means back. It's going to be locked and loaded Kyle Bradish opening day 2024.
Just make sure he doesn't mess with the glove positioning when he's starting.
Exactly.
I had one. It's not really super bold though. Looking at the pitchers on this roster, I don't know how bold I can really get. But I'm going to say Cole Irvin is like right there with Kyle Bradish in terms of like WAR, wins above replacement value. I think Irvin probably second, but just right behind him. And I really have no statistical analysis there right now. It's just a vibes answer. Cause like I said, I love the vibes of Cole Irvin.
I'm going to say Michael Bauman emerges as one of the best bullpen arms on this team this year. I talked a little bit how I'm expecting regression from Dylan Tate and Michael Givens, and I think Michael Bauman helps to make up for that. I have seen flashes of why I was so high on Bauman really up until early last year, and I think that now that he's settling into a relief role, we're going to see the best of his repertoire come out over short outings. So Bauman, by this time next year, is your lockdown, probably honestly by August, is your lockdown setup guy.
Word for word, you stole mine. I was going to say Bauman comes out and is just the no doubt second best reliever on the team by the end of the year after Felix Bautista. So I will switch gears and I will say that Tyler Wells stays in the starting rotation all year long. I think, you know, if you look at his stuff plus numbers, his location plus, he has like all his pitches were above average when it came to that. I know Eno Saris was like pretty high on him even last year with his limited innings, and now I feel like he can kind of let the reins off. And I think he even was messing with something else. Was it a sweeper he was adding to? I don't know. But I think, you know, he's getting this chance, and maybe some other guys get hurt for when Means, Hall, and Rodriguez come up. But I think he's going to find a way to stay in the rotation all year long and be deserving of it too.
We'll flip that to bold hitter prediction. I'll start with Nick.
Gunnar Henderson, 30 home runs, 20 stolen bases, sub 25% strikeout rate.
I'll steal my own content again. Cedric Mullins is better than 2021 WAR-wise this season. I don't think that means more homers, but I think it means more doubles, more stolen bases, even better defense. And he is over a 6-win player this year and gets an extension at the end of the year.
Man, I'm trying to think of something good here. Let's say Adam Frazier bats 300 and Austin Hayes bats 225. I don't know. I don't have anything quite as good for the offense, but I'll say Adam Frazier bats over 300, has an OBP over 350.
Kyle Stowers over 20 homers, under 30% strikeout rate for me.
I like it. All right, predicted order of the AL East as we go down the home stretch here. How's this shaking out, Bob?
I'll say Blue Jays first, Orioles second, Yankees third, Rays fourth, Red Sox fifth.
I will go with the Rays to win the division. I will go with the Yankees second if their pitching gets healthy. I'll go with the Blue Jays third, the Orioles fourth, and the Red Sox fifth.
Blue Jays first, Yankees second, Orioles third, Rays fourth, Red Sox fifth.
Yeah, that's what I got. I'm buying into the Blue Jays hype again, even though I've done this, I think, every year that we've done preseason predictions, and they always blow up because they're the Blue Jays, but I just love their roster so much. Yankees always overcome the injuries. They get second. I went Orioles third because this is an Orioles podcast, and I'm going to be homer. And Rays, I just think the lineup is so fragile. I mean, I used to think of Brandon Lau, and I love the kid. I watched the kid play T-ball to now to the major league. So, but Franco as well. Like, I just think their lineup is one big injury away from just crumbling. And then the Red Sox, I think, are just absolutely terrible. So,
all right. So we'll go with bold non-Orioles prediction. And I'll start with Connor. This is league-wide. What is your bold prediction?
League-wide non-Orioles prediction. You know what? every single baseball person has been burned by this prediction for the past 8 years, but this is the year that Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout play in the playoffs together, and win a wild card round so that we get to see like a legitimate playoff series of Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout. Does that come at the misfortune of the Orioles in the wild card? Probably. But I think they finally do it, and then Shohei signs for $500 million with the Mets.
I like that one. I'm going to go – I feel like I also go with this team most years when we do this. But – and again, it's because I've invested a lot of money into White Sox players and my best ball teams. I'm going to say the White Sox emerge as one of the hottest teams in the league. Maybe not win the AL Central, but that lineup has a lot of potential. Luis Robert – or is it Robert or Robert now? I can't remember which one he's going by. But Yoan Moncada, bounce back year there. If the pitching holds up, I could see the White Sox continuing in the AL Central.
Okay. I'm going super bold. And, well, first of all, I predict that not a single person complains about the pitch clock by the time the year ends. I think that's just such a – everyone will love that by the time the season comes to a close. But my super bold prediction is the Dodgers don't make the playoffs.
I'm going with something similar, and if I have my information here correct, this has not happened since 2009 when the Rays missed the playoffs. Last year's World Series runner-up, the Phillies, will miss the postseason. They play in a tough division. They're coming out of spring training a little banged up, and I think that mid-tier of the National League is catching up to them now. So I could see the Giants, the Diamondbacks, and perhaps even the Brewers maybe overtaking them this year. And I'll throw this one out there too, because I feel like they're being a little overestimated in some circles. I think the White Sox are sellers at the deadline.
I'll take some of those pieces.
Me too.
We'll go into some quick over-unders now, and I'll start with this one. This is all based off of FanGraphs projections. Steamer has Gunnar Henderson at a 3.1 war. Bob, will Gunnar go over or under 3.1 war?
Double.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll say over.
Hammer the over. 32 over. Homers. I already said it. Great defense. Rookie of the year. Let's do it.
All-star. Gold glove.
Adley Rutschman at 17 home runs. I think sportsbooks have him at 16.5.
I think over. I think people are kind of downplay his power. He has real power. He's going to easily hit 20 to 25. So I'll say over.
23 homers for Adley, and I think he hits a few more from the right side this year, which helps him get there. Not at Camden Yards, though.
Something I found interesting, I'm taking the over. He hit 8 of his 13 home runs from the beginning of August until the end of the season last year. So that tells you how it took his power a little while to come around, but when it came around, it did fully. So I'm going to say 21 homers for him this year.
Yeah. Did you see that homer he hit right-handed the other day? I'm smashing the over on that for sure.
All right. Over under Cedric Mullins. Zips has him with 28 stolen bases. Zach?
Over.
I'm going to say under. I think he's going to be more conservative there. More power, less stolen bases.
Well, if he's going to hit my 6-war prediction, he's going way over. I don't think Jorge Mateo will play enough this year to like fight him like they did last year, but I think Mullins can push 45 stolen bases with the new rules. And I think it's not about the bases; it's about the pickoffs. Yeah. And I think he could push towards 50 potentially.
Yeah, I'll say it again: double.
I already gave my answer on this one. I have the over. Over under 19 homers for Kyle Stowers, and I'll start with Connor.
I'm going to say under. That doesn't mean he's going to have a bad year. I don't know. I mean, I think he can get close to it. I think he'll hit somewhere around 15. I just think it's still not going to be everyday playing time for him until at least maybe the end of the year. And I just think it's going to be tough for him to get to that number without that consistent playing time.
Yeah, 19 is a really good number. I'll say 18 under.
I'm going to say under as well because of the playing time. And you know, maybe we see a higher average and more doubles from Stowers, hopefully. Colton Cowser is at 26 games on Steamer. Over under 26 games for Colton Cowser, Zach.
Going the under, but not by much. But like I said earlier, I think he comes up at the beginning of September and is used in more of a part-time role. So that's going to put him just under.
Yeah, I said the same thing September 1st. So I'll put him under around 15 or 16 games in September, maybe at the most.
I'll put him over.
I'm going to say under. I don't think much changes in that outfield as long as everybody plays well.
Already gave my answer to this, so I'll say over ahead of time. Anthony Santander, 29 home runs. Steamer and Zips both have that.
Over. Nick. Over. At least, I'll say he matches 33 again.
29? He's going to hit 29 homers. That's my prediction. Push. He's going to hit 29.
That is actually a really good number. I'm taking the over, but that is a good number. Over under 30 home runs for Ryan Mountcastle. This is what Zips has. Oh, Nick, you're buying in fully, and I need to hear why.
I'm buying into all of the, you know, the advanced underlying data seems to say, you know, he's a little bit unlucky. I think he's figured out the wall. He's going to use more of that field. I don't know. Maybe it's the smile again, more vibes here with Mountcastle. I'm going to say 35 for Ryan Mountcastle.
It's the all-time low karaoke for me. Over.
That is an amazing clip. I'm going to say slightly under, but I think he's going to hit a lot of doubles and have a really, really productive offensive season. I think the wall will steal just enough to keep him under 30.
Over at 32, and he gets a Gold Glove finalist recognition this year, which he should have had last year.
I love it.
He should have.
Cole Irving has a Steamer projection of 4.54 ERA. Over or under, Zach?
Under.
That's an easy under. I'm buying Cole Irving. I mean, I don't think it'll be 3.54, but it's going to be under. He is built for 2023 Major League Baseball. He throws strikes. He works quickly. He's confident. He throws a lot of innings. I mean, he is not like other pitchers, but I think he's going under.
And he's built for post-2022 Camden Yards, too. So, yeah, under.
Yep. Smash the under easily there.
All right, Kyle Gibson, 172 innings pitched. That is a lot. Zach?
Over. I kind of agree with what Connor's been saying throughout this episode, that you're going to rely on him the way you relied on Jordan Lyles last year. And I just also think that Gibson's number last year was probably lower because he was not that good pitching in the hitter's park in front of a bad defense, whereas now he's going to be in a neutral ballpark in front of a good defense. That's going to allow him to go deeper in the game, so I take the over. And I think it's going to be over by quite a bit.
Over. I think he'll go over that Jordan Lyles mark of 179, and he'll hit around the 185-ish number this year.
I was going to say, give me 190 for Kyle Gibson. They're going to run him out there. He's going to have some really good outings.
I'm going under. I think John Means, Grayson Rodriguez, D.L. Hall, they got to make room somehow. Kyle Gibson, long man from August in September.
Zips DC now has what I think is the most relevant projection of the night. Grayson Rodriguez at 97 innings pitched. I'm going to start with Connor here. Are you going over or under?
97 innings. I'm assuming that's been updated since what happened today. Because if he was on the opening day roster, I would have smashed the over. 97 innings. I'm going to say under. I think I'm just feeling negative about the entire Grayson Rodriguez situation right now.
I'll say over. I said 110. I think it'll be around that.
I'm going to say over. I'm going to say they try to get him to 100 at the major league level, but I don't have much confidence in that answer. That's it.
This could go either way. I think I'm kind of in line with you, Nick. And the reason for that is that I pulled up Kyle Bradish's numbers. 117 innings at the major league level last year, plus 27 innings in the minors. And that was despite basically missing a month of action with the injury in the middle of the season, not being in the major leagues for 2 months. He still got to 117. And I know Grayson has more limitations, and I don't expect him to get to that. But I think that suggests there's a realistic path to 100 to 102 innings for him this year.
One can hope. Last over-under here, Felix Bautista is at 29 saves on Fangraphs projections. Bob, over-under.
Over. I don't know who's saving games outside of Felix Bautista if he's not hurt. And I think we're competitive. So, yeah, at least 30 saves for the Mountain.
I could see him going under, maybe there's a little more of the arm fatigue stuff and they just want to make sure he doesn't completely overwork himself like he did last year. I mean, it'll be in the 20s somewhere, I think, but I think, you know, Dylan Tate, if he's back healthy, he'll get a shot. Michael Givens, if he's back healthy, he'll get a couple shots. And Cino Perez will get a couple shots. And Bautista will be the closer, but maybe he pitches in more of those, you know, high leverage eighth inning roles sometimes, and then Dylan Tate comes in for the ninth inning. I think it'll be close to that, and he'll still be dominant, but I'll say under.
I'll go over. I don't think it's going to be by much. I would, well, maybe like 30, 33 or 30, 34 saves this year would kind of be my ceiling. I just don't think that they're going to split the save totals up as much this year as they did last year. And there's probably going to be a lot of close opportunities for him. So I think that I'll take the over, but not by a significant amount.
Yeah, just give me the over here. I'll buy it. Hopefully this team is competitive, wins a lot of games. Bautista is your guy. You're going to rely on him. And as long as he stays healthy, give me the over.
Go with Bob to lead our last prediction of the night.
Yes, missed that. Oh yeah, World Series predictions. Let's end on a note. Let's go with Connor first.
The vibes, as long as Fernando Tatis does not mess them up, the vibes for the San Diego Padres are too good right now. I love that they got over the Dodgers hump in the playoffs last year. I think the Dodgers will get to the playoffs, but they're going to have a little bit of a dip year for them. And I just think this is the Padres' year. I think the Mets without Edwin Diaz is going to hurt them a lot. Like, he is so good. I know he's just a reliever, but he is ridiculous. So I'm going to take the Padres out of the National League. In the American League, I mean, I think I've picked the Blue Jays the past couple of years, and it's just, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen at this point. So I'm going to say that the Mariners ride the good vibes to the World Series, and I'll take the Padres, though, to win it all this year.
I'm going to go with the Mariners out of the American League as well. I just think it's a really solid team top to bottom. And if you want a fun storyline as an Orioles fan, everybody always talks about Adley Rutschman, Bobby Witt Jr. Give me Adley Rutschman, Julio Rodriguez for the next 10 years. And I think an interesting way to have that start out would be for the Mariners to win it all for the first time in franchise history, and they will defeat the Atlanta Braves, who I think will benefit from Edwin Diaz being hurt. They will win the National League East. They'll knock off the Padres in the NLCS and get back to the World Series for the second time in 3 years, but they will lose this time.
I like it. I'm going to say Angels or Rangers versus – no. You guys stole my AL. It's Mariners. I love that Mariners team a lot. I really love the young pitching they have. I think they could be something special. And Jerry DePoto, if he needs something, he's going to go out and get it. We know that. More Jerry DePotos out there in the world. But NL, I'm going to say Cardinals. Though the pitching is very suspect, I don't love the pitching at all. But I do really, really love the Cardinals lineup. So I'm going to say Mariners Cardinals.
Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker. It's a nice young couple of players to go with Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. I'll say
prospects on your major league roster. What a novel idea.
Interesting. I'll agree with Connor. I'll go San Diego Padres win the World Series this year. Juan Soto, I think, going to have a huge bounce back year over your Baltimore Orioles in the World Series. Manny Machado takes it out on the old team. Let's end on a high note. I mean, who cares what these predictions are? I'm going to say the Orioles. I'm going to be a homer.
I think some would tell you that's not really a high note to end on, but we'll take it for tonight.
Hey, I have a shirt that says 2023 World Series champions. I'll settle for the runner-up.
So, Connor, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. You mentioned at the top of the show that you are going to have your reaction on your show, Locked On Orioles, coming up about Grayson Rodriguez starting the season in the minor leagues. But what else do you have in the works?
Yeah, so that'll be Tuesday's episode, talking Grayson Rodriguez, talking a little bit about Danny Coulombe, who came over from the Twins reportedly on Monday. And we'll also talk about the rest of the roster cuts and what it means for the roster. Wednesday, I've got, I'm sure we'll have the roster at some point by then. So I'll break down the full roster. And then Thursday's episode, I'm doing something a little different. Instead of, you know, early morning pod posting, I'm going to wait till the opening day game ends and jump on right after and have a live reaction for that one, hopefully in Orioles W.
Well, we look forward to hearing that. That's Connor Newcomb, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the host of Locked On Orioles. Connor, thank you for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I'm sure all my prediction will be wrong, but I'm used to it at this point. So,
yeah, thank you. Always great content. And make sure you guys subscribe to Locked On Orioles as well. Although I'm sure if you're listening to our show, you are already subscribed. But if not, go do it.
Head to the YouTube. We got a lot of giveaways coming up this season as well. A lot of Orioles giveaways turn into Locked On Orioles giveaways.
Yeah, I was going to say, go to the YouTube. You know, if we need the subscribers, we can share subscribers on YouTube with them.
Let's do it.
Absolutely. And a couple of quick notes here. First off, congrats to our friend John Mioli on his new gig at the Baltimore Banner. John's work with the newsletter Maximizing Playoff Odds has been excellent, and fortunately it's going to carry over to the Banner, which now has an amazing coverage of Orioles lineup, or amazing lineup of Orioles coverage between him and Andy Kosko, who we had on our show last week. So definitely check out Baltimore Banner's sports coverage if you have not already. And while you're browsing the internet, be sure to head over to BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com, where you can get all the latest coverage on the Orioles, Ravens, college basketball, and more. And while you're there, be sure to hop on the message board and join a discussion with fellow readers of the site as well as contributors. We will be back next week at our normal time to react to the first weekend of the minor league season, as the Norfolk Tides will face the Durham Bulls on Friday night to kick off their campaign. We'll also probably get into minor league rosters, which we'll hopefully have by then for all four full season affiliates. And don't forget that we will have daily content on our Patreon channel throughout the season. You can join for as little as $3 a month right now and have access to our WhatsApp group, get a shout out from us on the show. The $5 and $10 levels will give you the daily content plus other perks. So head over to patreon.com right now to find us there. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to On the Verge.
That'll do it for this week's episode of On the Verge. Be sure to check out our Patreon page, where you can help show your support for the show and get bonus content, including monthly top 50 updates to our prospect list and daily game recaps during the season, and much, much more.